folks, and welcome back to the JockX podcast. This is episode 39. Now, this is actually part two of Tyson Popplestone's adventure in the Himalayas, in the Nepal there, doing a training trip basically for Everest next year to get the green light to go ahead for that. And we left part one at a point where Tyson was feeling quite unwell on a major climb that he needed to tick, the box that he needed to get done in order to get the green light for Everest next year. And we are right in the thick of the action as we left it, and we're going to take it right back to that point with the start of this episode. So I hope you really enjoy this one. All the show notes are going to be at eliteteamleadership.com.au/39, so you can just jump on there and check out all the links to Tyson stuff and all the extra bits and pieces there. Also, if you can subscribe and give us a review on iTunes, that would be amazing. If you love this, that would be super, really helps us out. And obviously, guys, if you're new listeners, really welcome. Welcome to the team. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. Excited you're here. We've got a great guy in Tyson telling his story, and it's quite funny, and I think you're going to absolutely love it. So I'm not going to hold it back any further. We're going to get stuck back in. Now, actually, we left part one. It actually turned out to be a coffee break in reality. So we come back. We are joking a little bit about a coffee break, a little tort stop, and we're back in business with the second part. So enjoy episode 39 with myself, James O'Connor, and Tyson Popplestone. So we just had a quick little coffee break there and a toilet break.
Yes.
That was quite funny. We just sort of, got to that point where like, maybe it was the whole...
All that talk about the toilet.
I was like, yeah. I think both of us like, I need to go to the bathroom now. So we're back. We're back in business. So it was about a 2 minute break.
Yes.
I've got my caveman coffee. So I've got a coffee. We're back on.
And back on board.
And folks, I'm hoping you're loving this because I'm enjoying sitting here listening to Tyson's story. And we're just saying, like, I know we're about an hour or so in, but I think this is, I think it's cool to go through it sort of chronologically and sort of discussing how it went down.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people out there followed you heavily and really want to know what happened. So I'm glad, man, you're sharing it with us. And man, just quite, I'm stoked that you're here.
Oh, no, it's good fun.
Freaking love this shit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Let's get straight back into it. We were at the point, you're about 2 hours in.
Yeah.
You've got diarrhea.
Yeah.
You're throwing up multiple times. Now you've been told by Kevin, your leader of the group, that said, one more throw up.
Yeah.
One more toilet stop.
Yeah.
You're out. Your Everest dream.
Yeah.
Over.
For the time being. Yeah.
For 2016.
Yeah, for 2016.
But this box has to be ticked.
And I liked it. To be honest, going into it, whether there was flexibility or not, I liked the idea. If they say, these are the two mountains we recommend you do, that's what I do.
Yep.
I want to go over to Everest with everything ticked that I could possibly tick to make me think, okay. And because of how much you're bloody spending on Everest, you don't want to get there and go, oh, I should have just maybe had a bit more experience.
Well, that's another whole point. Like,
that's another whole conversation.
Well, we can go into that a little bit. So for this month trip, it was sort of originally priced at about $5,000, you were told. Because I remember I looked at going to Everest 12 months ago too with you. And I was looking into it for about a month. And I seriously, we had meetings, we had chats. And I was arming back and forth whether I should join you for this. Because I'm a big fan of this sort of challenge like this. And I wanted to join it. So my best mate's doing it.
Yeah.
Great opportunity for me to get on there too. I know I want to do it. But for me, ultimately, I just realized it felt too short a time frame, had too much going on.
Yeah.
I couldn't get the focus like you could get.
Yeah.
And therefore, I reluctantly had to say no. And I remember the day that you posted, I think late January this year, that you posted, I'm going to Everest and the launch.
That's right.
And I was in the car and I saw that post and I actually teared up because I was like, fuck, I'm not going.
I want to be there.
And this is a best opportunity, my best mate going there.
Yeah.
And I'm missing out.
Yeah.
And I thought, far out, maybe I should just quit things and shuffle my work schedule around and do this because I thought, you know, there's a lifetime opportunity. What I'm basically trying to say is I looked into Everest a bit too.
Yeah.
And that you were told $5,000.
Yeah.
What did it ultimately come to for this trip?
It was...
For this 1 month trip.
Everything. The original $5,000 that we thought, it turned out to be $5,000 US.
Of course.
Which at the moment with our conversion rate is I don't even know.
And you weren't told this, were you? Like,
not early in the piece.
Why weren't you really told?
Not early in the piece. Oh, I should have. In hindsight, I wish I had asked the questions. Now I know the questions to ask, but at the time, I was just rolling with the punches. But the trip worked out to be, it was more expensive than what we originally intended. I can't tell you the exact figure.
What's roughly around?
I reckon it would have been around 12 or so grand Australian. Yeah, Australian dollars. So, which is fine. But at the time, I think just in hindsight, I probably wish I had known that it was going to be, we're talking American dollars, not Australian dollar. Yeah. Just little things I didn't even think to ask.
But it's kind of frustrating for me sort of viewing that, because I'm a bit like, it's the key thing really holding you back from climbing Everest is the money. Like,
yeah.
Now, we were originally told too, I was told this as well, it was 40 grand to climb Everest.
Yeah.
On top of that. Top of the five and 40. Grand for the training trip, 40 grand for the main trip.
Yeah.
And that's probably one of the biggest things that keeps everyone out, which is, I think, is kind of a good thing, because it's like a bar that...
I agree.
It keeps all the all the people who aren't serious out, because it's fucking hard for some people to get 40 to grand together.
Yeah.
It's not a week's pay, you know what I mean? Like, well, not for most people.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing.
Yep.
Because it's a weeds out. It's a bit like a test. It weeds out people who aren't serious. Yeah,
100%.
And it's not easy, whether you're in sponsorship or paying it for yourself or whatever you're doing. It just weeds out people who aren't serious.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I reckon you're
right. But when it gets a bit messy and murky for me is when it doesn't turn out to be 5 grand.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn out to be 40 grand. It's significantly.
Yeah.
12 grand is 250% more.
Yeah, isn't that true?
It's 2.5 times more. And, well, it's 200, yeah, 200, yeah, 2.5 times more. Yeah. And that kind of pisses me off in a bit in a way because, like I said, that's the biggest issue holding people back. And you've committed. And now you're forking out 2.5 times for the first trip. And that frustrates me as a mate of yours and that. And I guess looking back at this first trip, we'll say, I guess what would your advice be to people listening to this or thinking of climbing Everest or doing some significant expedition?
Yeah.
What would your advice be in terms of getting prices in stone or prices? What would you do if you had your time again? Would you be like, I need this in writing?
That's what you need in writing because... I felt like there was just there was real problems with communications between me and Pete Freaks about how much this was actually going to cost.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It was, for example, when I was there, I was in headspace that whatever it takes, I'm going to do. I had companies that were interested in getting on board with the Everest trip. So to be honest, I had companies on board.
You had cool guys there.
But I was talking major sponsors. Like I was speaking with companies about getting on board for 40 grand sponsorship. Acquire Learning actually sponsored Alyssa Azar earlier this year to climb Everest.
Yep.
For a big sponsorship.
What did they give her roughly, do you think?
50 grand.
50 grand, that's solid. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. A 50 grand sponsorship and...
Australian?
Yeah, 50 grand Oz.
Australian, keyword.
Yeah. And what happened, so obviously that all the climbs this year were cancelled after the avalanche, after the earthquake.
So no one climbed this year, did they?
No one climbed.
No one climbed.
No one climbed. So I was talking with those guys. So in my mind, I was thinking, you know what? And people had invested in me. I had asked people, I had organised, we had fundraisers. We had people like yourself and other mates and just generous people out there who were contributing to the cause. They wanted to see me do it.
Absolutely.
And they've given me their money. So I had the money in the bank and I was thinking, okay, well, look, worst has come to worst. I've got to fork out a bit more than I had originally planned. It wasn't ideal because I wanted to... my whole thing was I wanted to use this money wisely. I didn't want to buy things I didn't need, but I wanted everything I definitely needed. So I was spending this money and I came back pretty much... at zero after this trip. But that was okay.
I had about
13 grand in total.
Yep, this is what the money you raised.
Yes. And then I had to buy, obviously, a whole heap more gear. So I went down to Kathmandu. They looked after me with a heap of gear. But when I got there, they said, look, you'll need a bit more of this, a bit more of that. And it was just a little bit murky. It was just a messy situation.
Were you getting taken for a ride, you think, in those shops over there? Well, Kevin was there with you, wasn't he?
It's hard to say. Kev had my back. Kev was negotiating hard.
Yeah,
he was negotiating hard. Okay, good. He was good. He was really supporting me. And he knew...
Because you don't know anything about this.
I don't know anything.
You
were
blind in the dark. Yeah. You're trusting Pete Freaks and everyone else to look after you, to do this as economical as... And that's what you were told from the start. They're going to do this as best possible price for you, because they understood that you didn't have the funds to... You're only 28 years old. Like, man, you don't have 100 grand sitting there to spend on this stuff. Like, you don't have that.
Yeah.
Not many people do. No one does, really. Unless you're, people have serious cash on them.
Yeah.
And you know, 99% of the population doesn't.
Yeah,
so true. And even, yeah, so long story short, you've 2.5 times spent more what you were, and tell us in regards to, so the 40 grand Australian for your Everest part, the part of climbing actually the mountain in April, May.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, you told me a story how that blew out, well, that was starting to blow out in price too on you.
Well, originally, I think the biggest thing that I wish I had cleared up early was the 40 grand, it wasn't Australian, it was US. And
so, what is that? We're at about 70 cents to the dollar.
Mm.
So you're looking at around 60 grand there.
Yeah.
Australian.
Yeah.
40, when you switch 40 grand American from Australian into American, you're going straight, you're adding on 20 G's, click of a fingers. Yeah. That's just like a little piece of small writing that it kind of pisses me off. Like, we're in Australia, we're not talking American prices right now. Maybe you should have questioned that, maybe you shouldn't, but that's why you hire these guys, and that sort of, for me, it pisses me off.
Mm.
It really does.
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, you were in the mindset, what was your mindset? You were like, I'm doing this regardless.
Well, to be honest, at the time, I feel like you gave me a bit of a wake-up call when I got home. At the time, I was like, Tice, that's okay. Flexibility is a lot better than perfection. Just roll with the punches a bit. There's always going to be stuff. And massive credit to Kev. He goes, mate, in this industry, he goes, stuff always creeps up that you're not expecting. He goes, there's going to be stuff that I don't even know about yet. And he was very, very upfront with that. So Kev was 100% on my side. He was backing me. He was supporting me. He was doing what he could, because obviously he's working for the Canadian company as well, who are sort of relaying information to him.
Yeah. I know, but like, if I sell a training program, and it costs someone $10,000 to do, and it's a team training program for a football team or a business or whatever, I have it clearly it's $10,000 to do.
Yeah.
I don't have it there that it's, oh, well, it's American. And that doesn't include this, my flights, my this, my that. It's all black and white.
Yeah.
It says on it, you prefer the training room, but I prefer the training room. I just don't think they were transparent in what they did. And that's what annoys me about the situation for you. That's my view from this. And that I'm just saying this for listeners out there, that I guess from the learnings, and again, this is an empowerment show, I think my learnings are, you've got to be very careful. Yeah. Like, you've got to, on the finance side of things, when the money's big, in terms of bigs for in the ultimate, you're just doing crazy adventure. Like, this isn't a house or anything, but this isn't buying something, an investment really. It's just purely, there's not going to be money return for me really, other than maybe speaking engagements and stuff afterwards. But ultimately, it's just a leisure activity. So, but it's funny though, all along, you and me, as soon as we got the figure of 40 grand earlier this year, you and me, and like, maybe I'll even take credit, I said to you, Tice, you need 60. Off the bat, I said to you, Tice, don't even think it's going to be 40 grand. I know it's not going to be 40 grand.
Yep.
So I said to you, Tice, it's going to be 60.
Yep.
But what happened to the 60 grand, well, 40 grand American, what happened to that when you got to Nepal? Just tell me the story of talking to some people over there.
I was actually sitting with a couple of guys who were looking at climbing Everest with the same company, same team, same climb, everything. And I said, my frame of thought at this time as well, I wasn't worried about money. In my head, I was getting it. Like, I was, whatever I needed, I would find it. I would get it. Companies would get on board.
And that's
whatever.
A cool attitude. And that's what you needed.
I was backing myself.
Yep.
So that was not going to be the thing that was going to stop me going in my mind. And it's not. It hasn't been. But it was just a little bit of a shake to the system. We got there and I was talking to a bloke looking at climbing it. And I said, oh, far out. So 40 grand US is not bad. And he's like, oh, those were the days. And I go, what are you talking about? Those are the days. That's what I'm trying to earn. Like, that's what I'm trying to rate. When I'm talking to my major sponsors, that's what I'm saying I need. And he goes, mate, you're going to have to up it. And I go, what? He goes, well, it's 60 grand US now. And I go, hang on.
Just that too?
I was like, hang on. There's, I was like, so it's 20. What's that, Australia? I don't know.
So you've gone from 40 grand Australian.
To 60 grand
to 60
US.
Grand Australian, because that's the equivalent of 40 grand American.
Yes.
Now you've gone to 60 grand American.
Yep.
Which is getting towards 100 grand Australian.
And
so they've just got you've gone from 40 grand Australian to 90 odd grand, 100 grand.
Yeah.
American. I should actually get my phone out and find exactly what the goddamn exchange rate is right now. In fact, I'm going to do it as we speak.
Yep.
If I can get onto the internet here, which I surely can. So you've gone to... What's your password? Oh, that's right. I was... Folks, we don't usually get on the internet when we're in this podcast, but this we're going to get onto this internet because this is a little important point. I think it's going to be good for people in future. There's a lot of people out there listening to this that are going to do crazy adventures.
Yeah.
You know, sailing trips, mountain climbs, treks, marathons, overseas adventures, motorcycle across China. You know, all this type of crazy things. Like, I fucking want people to get out there and do it. I'm going to do it. You're going to do it.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have a fun time. And, you know, but this is just a cool lesson, I think. I think it's a good lesson. And so what's the... US exchange rate right now.
Well, I reckon while you do that, there is you're going to hate this as well. I'm going to be in trouble for you. But there was a moment just after that where they were...
Wait. $1 right now equals $1.39 Australian. So if I do my maths, I can use it in my head, but I'm going to get you a exact figure. So they've gone... So... Yeah, I'm going to get my calculator working. Yep, sweet. So $40,000 times 1.39.
Yes.
So you're looking at $55,000. So you've gone from $40,000 Australian to when they said American, it's gone to, you've dropped $15,000 on that.
Bang.
Blink of an eye.
Yep.
Now you've got to Nepal and you've talked to these couple of blokes and couple of guys from Peak Freaks.
Yep.
And they've gone to no bro, it's $60,000. So now 60 times 1.39. You're looking at $83,400.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, bang.
So you've jumped up from $40,000 Australian to $83,400 in the blink of an eye. Fucking eye.
Yeah.
And that kind of pisses me off.
Yeah.
Really pisses me off. It was, like I said, if I sell a training program, you got to be transparent. This is 2015. This isn't 1970s dodgy used car market. Yeah. Like, this is, you know what I mean? Know, and it really pisses me off. And I know I'm giving these guys a bit of a hard time, but they bloody deserve it.
Yeah.
They deserve it. I'm putting it out there.
Yeah.
They need to lift their game. Next time, they need to get some damn figures.
Yeah.
And I know it changed. I know this shit comes up and the Nepalese government do all their sorts of things. Yeah. But when you're that far out, like back in university days, I used to work for a, just casually when I was doing a university degree, I was in the landscaping market and I was working with this guy who do the biggest and baddest houses in Toorak, right? And he would give quotes out, like, you know, for $1 million quotes to do these landscaping and stuff for their amazing backyards and stuff. And he always wanted to be within just a few percent of it. And he could guess that right. And when he's got millions he's working with, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions. This is just a small idea. Like, I know property developers do way more. I'm just giving you an idea. And he always wanted to be right on the mark, but you don't want to be far off.
No, fair enough.
And this just pisses me off.
Yeah.
See, they doubled it in the space of no time, and you're running off $40,000, which you, like I said earlier, you'll mean you would allow more.
We knew.
But this is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's way too far.
It's way too far. And now, we've already talked this before, where to go from here? So you've got your $60,000 US now, which is $83,400 Australian you're looking at.
Yep.
Tell me a little conversation you had just after that.
So we found out that I thought this cost was all inclusive, everything you need, it's there. But then we find out that there's this little thing. So if you want your own porter when you're on the mountain, now that porter is obviously you're going to be out climbing all day. When you get back, you want to rest, you want to relax. That's just what you do. If you want someone to do your water and your food and everything and not have to do it yourself, it's a $5,000 cost on top of that to hire a
American,
porter.
American, I'm guessing?
American.
American. So,
we're taking that up another...
And you're going to need this porter, let's be honest, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to get this porter on board, so another $5,000 American, which is 6.95.
Yeah. Takes up to about 90K.
90.35K at this point. So you got your porter, what else are we looking at? So you've just got 60K, you've been told by the big boss.
Yep.
And now you've been informed of it doesn't include a porter.
Yeah.
So you've got another six and a bit K to throw on top of that. What other expenses on top of that?
And then there's this little cost. So there's about another $500 for your climbing suit from Camp 4 onwards. Yeah. There's just, I felt like there was just, and Kev even said this to me. He's like, mate, I remember the first time I climbed Everest. He's like, there's an endless amount of gear you feel like you need to get. He goes, for me now, it's okay. But he goes, the first time, it just keeps on creeping up. And I was like, oh, shivers. So in the back of my...
What does he mean by first time? Like, I know you got to get the gear.
Yeah.
The gear's not that much. You might spend 5-10 grand or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Where is all this cash going?
Yeah.
It's going straight in their pockets, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I don't know
where it goes.
It seems absurd, but like, I know it's a... I don't know. Maybe they made the mistake of telling you 40 grand. Maybe at the beginning they said it was going to be 90. You'd probably be like, oh, yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
And 40 grand to me, the reason why, that's why I said to you, make it 60, because I knew it'd be, it sounded a bit sharp. Like, I knew from my experience, it was definitely going to be sharp. And at the same time, there's nothing wrong with coming back with cash.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just frustrates me. And so you look at, you're at 90.35. Plus your 600, but 91 grand is at least now.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, it's probably going to round off to 100.
It's going
to
go to 100.
It's going to go to 100.
Yeah. As I said, at the time, though it's annoying, though it's frustrating, though looking back, I should have been asking better questions. At the time, I was like, it's going to happen.
Yep.
That's put a spanner in the works. But I'm up on this mountain, about to turn around thinking, you know what, I'm not, at this point in time, while I was trying to climb this first mountain, while I was sick, I'm thinking, I've got to get there. I've got to do it. You know what I mean? It wasn't even going to be a thought that this would be what stopped me.
So just in summary, just before we move back to the climb, that was tangent, but I think it's very important.
Yeah.
What would be your three recommendations for anyone listening to this, looking to do an expedition, a climb, some sort of adventure? What would be, and you're doing it with a tourist group or some sort of business entity, what would be your recommendations, Tyus? Or what are you thinking of for next time? Which I know you'll be doing something soon, crazy soon. What will be your recommendations?
I reckon, number one, get everything in writing and sign it. It's like, find out what you're actually signing up to 100% and get both parties to sign it, just so you know what you're going for. I would say the second thing is, before you invest a whole heap of time and money, make sure you absolutely love what it is that you're signing up for. Don't sign up for it blindly. And I think the biggest one for me is don't let your ego dictate what you chase. And I say that because I feel like Everest, in all honesty, and I hate admitting this, but I feel like a lot of it was so people would go, "Fire, did you see what Tyce did? Did you see that he climbed Everest?" And I felt like my motivation to do it was... not fully wrong, because I think there was a lot of it in me that I wanted to prove to myself that I could do something like this. But I think more of it was just trying to leave a mark on people's mind to go, "Fire out, did you see that? See Tyce?" And I felt like I was probably guided more by my ego than I should have been.
It's interesting. We're going to come back to this.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back onto the mountain.
Yes.
And just talk the story a little further through.
Yeah.
And we'll come back onto that bit.
Yeah.
So you're on the mountain. You're a vomit or a little tort stop away from turning around.
Yep. And then the final vomit comes. So we are still, as a heads up, so at this point, we've been walking for about 3.5, probably close to 4 hours. We're into our climb now. So we're well and truly up the face of the mountain, but we still probably had another 5 hours worth of climbing to go. And then the final vomit comes and I just sit down on the ground and Kev comes over and he goes, "That's it, mate." He's like, "We're going down." And I was like, "Okay," because he'd already warned me. But then as soon as he'd said, "It's time to go down," it was like my mind just allowed how I was actually feeling to shine through. And I got so sick. Like, it was the sickest I've ever been. It was honestly one of the scariest things I've experienced, because there's no one around at this stage. We're 5,600 meters up the face of a mountain. I know I've got a 2.5 hour walk home if I'm going to get home. And I'm thinking, far out, how am I getting back? Because I felt like all my attention had just been getting up the face. And Kev was incredible. He goes, "Mate," immediately his climb was over as well. He was just about getting me back down the mountain. And he goes, "Just take a minute here." And I was vomiting. At this point, I'm saying, "Kev, am I going to be all right?" Because I think the reality of where I was at kicked in. And he's like, "Mate, you're going to be fine. You're fine. You're just sick. I'm going to help you down. We're going to carry you down, whatever." So we've turned around. And Leslie and Ming Ma, they were planning to keep going. and Kev said, I'll help him down, you guys keep going. But Kev and I turned around, and about 20 minutes down, Kev yelled out, guys, we're going to need your help. Because I was like, I was crying.
How did he yell back? What do you mean?
He just yelled to the guy. So they kept walking a little bit.
So in 20 minutes, they didn't get that far away.
No, sorry, 20 meters, I meant to say.
Oh, 20 meters.
20 meters.
What do you mean? Like, what happened?
So we walked about 20 meters, and then I just lost it, like, just the biggest spews, and I was cooked. And he goes...
So you're on your all fours.
And we started walking down, and then I just sort of, not collapsed, but I just got down on my hands and my knees, and I was just like, I can't walk. And then Kev yelled back to the guys, like, we need your help. And Leslie, the Canadian chick, we got on so well. She's like, no, it wasn't even Kev's decision. He's like, guys, we need your help. And Leslie's like, yeah, fuck this. We're coming to help him. She was just a team player. Wow. So she walked around. She came and grabbed me. She's like, mate, we're going to get down together. Wow. Mingma came and grabbed my bag. Kev had an arm around him. I had my arm around him. And every 30 seconds, I was just falling back over. And just I was just sitting there. And at this
every 30 seconds?
I was probably 30 seconds to it. Probably a minute, say.
A minute but you were falling down on the ground, throwing
sitting,
up
I was
again.
Just sitting down on the ground.
Dry reaching.
Dry
sort of
reaching. It got to a point where there's just nothing left. And...
And still going to the toilet? Still
going to the toilet.
Really
yeah.
as well. And they're all... Like, it's just everyone's around. You just obviously just didn't give it.
I didn't care. At that time, I was like, I just don't care. Whatever. I just was so sick. I didn't care what they saw, what they heard.
What were you thinking in terms of what was causing this at this point? What were you thinking?
I've been sick from food poisoning before. And I knew that it was food poisoning.
You didn't ever think it was altitude sickness?
Not at all. And Kev was...
Why not?
Because... One of the big things of altitude sickness is like a confusion or a daze, like you're a little bit, haziness, headaches, and I had none of those symptoms. And I was vomiting and I was shitting myself, and I was not shitting myself, and I was like, this is an altitude sickness. And Kev goes, I was saying to Kev, I was like, Kevin, we're going to be all right. And Kev, just he had my back 100%. He's like, mate, you're going to be fine, we'll get you down. He's like, just get any crazy thoughts out of your mind about, you know, just getting stuck here or whatever. I was like, fuck, I gotta roll. So what happened? I just kept sitting down, and Kev goes, Tyson, this is the last time you're sitting down till the base of the mountain, which was about an hour away. And I was like, and I could see
so
why.
You walked for an hour and a half by this stage, or you're walking down faster.
We were walking down faster. Obviously,
how long did it take for you to get?
So from... say we had walked up for about 4 hours, we were going to be home in probably just under two.
Okay.
So I knew that I had 2 hours of just pain and exhaustion to deal with.
Is this still pitch black at this point?
Yeah.
Pitch
it's
black.
Dark.
You've only got a little headlight.
Yeah, I got a little headlight.
You can't see shit.
Actually, just to top it off, the battery in my headlight died. Oh. Just like that, out of nowhere. Because of the cold up there, the battery's run out real quick. So it died. So I'm relying on their lights.
It's
I'm just
pitch
in
black.
Dark.
You're walking with no lights.
I'm just looking at their lights, sort of watching their feet. And I was just...
And you're on a small, like, are you walking, just describe to me, so are you on, like, the top of, like, a ridge, or are you, are you walking beside a mountain?
We're basically up the middle of a mountain, so you got no drops.
So it's all flat,
it's
you're
all
walking
flat.
Straight up.
Yeah, we're walking straight up, so we hadn't got to the real intense part of the mountain yet.
Gotcha.
I was laying on the ground, Kev said, mate, that's the last time you're laying down until we get to the bottom of the mountain, and I was like, just let me lay here for a while, and I was just trying to go to sleep, I'll wake up later.
It's like when you're seasick, you just want to go to sleep.
Yeah, just want to go to sleep. So I was trying to sleep, and Kev goes, mate, that's it. And he pretty much just dragged me down. It needed to be done.
So at an hour to go, he's just gone,
you're not sitting down again. And then he's got my arm around here. I got my arm around Leslie. Shit. And they're just basically dragging me down.
They're obviously pretty beasty sort of animals, those two.
They're
tough.
They're what you need to be for that
what
environment.
What you need, for sure. But if you didn't have them... Oh, it's not. It wouldn't happen. But I was going to say, if you didn't have those people, you'd probably be in a bit of strife. But you wouldn't do that with that by yourself. But anyway.
So we made our way down and eventually somehow got back to this bloody tent.
Was that amazing feeling, or were you just so sick it didn't feel
amazing? I felt like it was a weird feeling. I knew Everest was over for me at that stage, and I felt a combination of disappointment and a relief that. Because you know when you're busting your ass trying to achieve something, you're putting in so much work, and it's a long grind, you know you got to do a lot. I felt the combination of just disappointment that it wasn't going to happen, and also like, oh, I can just chill a little bit. But also at that moment, I just wanted to be home. Because Everest was off, and I wasn't interested in climbing any more mountains, because the reason I wanted to climb mountains was not for a love of climbing. It was to tick the boxes that I needed to tick to get me to where I needed to be to climb Everest. So I woke up the next morning at about 10 o'clock. So say I was back in bed by about 6:30, about 4, what was that? It actually must have been closer to 7:30, I don't know. But we'd been gone for about 6 hours.
Yeah. So you're back in bed at 7:30.
Back in bed at 7:30, and I woke up at about 10.
You obviously didn't eat anything back.
I didn't drink anything. No, I woke up with an absolute throbbing headache.
What time did you wake up? How many hours did you sleep for?
Nah, 10:30. Like,
that's about three hours, nothing there.
And I was just cooked, and Kev came over, and he's like, mate, how you feeling? He goes, you're going back to Chukum today, which is the village.
So you're based camp and then going back to Chukum.
Yeah. So it's about a 2 hour walk.
What, that day?
Yeah.
Oh shit. So you've got back. Back at 7:30, had 3 hours sleep, and then Kev's coming.
Yeah.
And why is that? Because you're up too high, or you just needed
the altitude wasn't really a problem, but he just wanted me to be comfortable. I was in a tent. He was saying to me, he goes, mate, you're gonna have to tough it out. It's a 2 hour walk.
Oh.
He goes, but by the time you get back, he goes, you'll have a bed to sleep in. There'll be proper food, proper water, whatever else you need. So, to be honest, at that time, I was like, yeah, great. So, at about lunchtime, I got some water into me and started walking. Walked back, I felt fine. The porters took me back. I felt good. I was like, thank God.
So, Kevin didn't come back with you?
Nah, because they actually planned that they were going to do it the next morning.
Gotcha.
So, I thought, okay, well, thank God. I'm feeling better. I'm walking. I'm okay. Got back to camp, and I thought, okay, I'll feel better. I'll have some food. So, I had a big bowl of rice, and I was like, thank God. And then about half an hour later, all of that just came back up again.
Yeah.
And it was like, after that spew, I just went to bed and I was like, oh, I had headaches and I was sick.
Did you take any medication?
Not at this time. Nah, because I was just thinking, suffer. I just wasn't thinking clearly. I didn't have my wife or someone there to go, this is what you need to do. And I was just just let me sleep.
No, I understand that, because you sort of get those points where you're just like, you're so sick, you're not thinking straight. So it's just like, you know, when you get sick, nothing worse than being sick even in Melbourne, in your own home by yourself. You just cry out for someone to look after you. Because I'm a big sook when I get sick too. Yeah. And I know that feeling. I'd hate that feeling of being up in Nepal, in a little village. You don't even have Kevin with you anymore. Kevin and Leslie are off.
Yeah.
And doing their thing, which is fine. But you just don't have anyone look after you. And you just, someone gets you a drink or something to eat or give you that medication. And obviously you just, no one gave you that advice at that point.
I was laying in bed. I went to bed probably about 3 o'clock. And then I was dazing all afternoon. And then I thought I'd slept for the night. I was like, thank God. I woke up and saw 8:30 on my clock, and I was like, oh, thank God, new day. And I was like, let's just start afresh. And then I noticed it was 8:30 p.m. on the same day, and I was like, oh, I've got to get through the whole night. And at this time, I was like, I've had a migraine because I just hadn't had any water, had any food.
What was that an issue for? Like in a way, like, I know night's night, but like,
why did that concern you? It was just something comforting about it being a new day.
You just want to get out of that day.
And there was something comforting about just having people up and about, and everyone went to bed at about 8 o'clock.
So it's silence.
And it was silent.
You got no one. You're feeling lonely, sick.
Yeah. And I went out. I was in my room. Went out to a dining room. And I was like, please let there be someone here that can help me. And there were two American guys that had been sitting there all day. They'd just been journaling. And I went out, I was like, guys, like, I need your help. I was like, I need your help. I'm so sick. I've got a migraine. And I actually didn't, I don't know why, dumbest mistake, point four, take medication, take Panadol or something.
You didn't have anything on
me. I had nothing on me, which was stupid, because Kev told me, he goes, make sure you got some stuff.
Why didn't you?
I don't know. I just
forgot. Was that because you were trying to do it naturally?
Not really. Nah, I don't even know why. Like, looking back, I'm like, why didn't I have that? Anyway, I didn't. Lesson learned. These guys said to me, we've got some stuff for you, mate. We've got some, they had some Advil, which is just like a Panadol. I pumped about three of those, had some water, and they gave me this stuff to help my stomach settle down as well. And then that pretty much knocked me out, and I was gone for the night. Perfect. Then. Woke up, felt a bit better. Still spewing a bit.
Really?
Actually, I was spewing in bed. I woke up in the middle of the night. I had nowhere to spew, and I was like, oh, crap. No. And I just reached over for something, and I found my climbing helmet that I had hired. And I grabbed this, and I'd spewed all through this. It was disgusting. So I woke up in the morning, it was just like, it's a helmet full of spew. Oh. It was gross. So I wasn't getting my money back on that, I didn't think. So that was just sitting there.
Did you get your money back?
But I took it down to the creek, the running water the next day, and held it in there for about 20 minutes and just washed it all out. I got my money back. Woke up, felt a bit better, still fairly flat as you are. I knew that the guys were going to be back later that day, which was comforting. Nice to know that they were going to be back around. And just rested for the next couple of days. Just laid really low, started to eat a bit more, got my energy back up. The guys came back. That was nice, a bit comforting. They were helping me out a bit, which was nice, just getting me some drinks and some food and whatever else. I sat there for, actually, it was the next 2 or 3 days I sat there before we went to our next mountain, which for me at that stage, I just lost interest. I just was like, I don't want to climb another mountain, to be honest. And that was probably where I got most homesick. I was like, I just want
to
be home.
Were you on the phone to, like, family or Jesse, obviously, at this point?
Yeah.
And how were, like, you, obviously, yeah, were the well, tears coming?
Yeah, they were. Because it was a combination of being homesick and I just wanted to be back here with Jesse and back just chilling, and I just wanted some attention off her. I just wanted her to go, oh, babe, I'll get you water, I'll get you this, get you that.
Because you were stressed for those 3 days that you hadn't told her that you were going away. So that, you had that in your mind the whole time.
Yeah, I had that in my mind.
So as soon as you got back to this little town, you were probably on the Wi-Fi, were you pretty much straight away?
Yeah, yeah. And I called her and I was like, Everest is off. And her initial reaction was like, what?
Really?
Yeah. She was like, what are you doing, babe? She's like, you can't, because she didn't understand that it was just black and white. She's like, you're not just stopping now, like, you're gone for this. And I was like, babe, it's. And over a couple of minutes, she started to understand. I explained it to her a little bit, and she's like, man. And I was like, I just want to come home. The trip's off. And she's like, mate, you've put in that much work for this trip. She's like, you're not coming home. She's like, enjoy it for what it is. You're in Nepal. You're on the experience of a lifetime. Though it's hard, you're going to have stories to tell. Just live in the moment. Trying to tell me just all this practical, helpful stuff that, to be honest, really helped. And I took her advice, and she missed me as well.
Like, pretty amazing by her, by the
great
way.
Great effort on her behalf.
Like,
just
she's a little superstar. And, yeah. Pretty cool advice. Like, yeah, that's pretty impressive. I'm pretty impressed.
And I'm so glad she said it, because we wouldn't have this to talk about right now. You know what I mean? Otherwise, the trip would have ended there. But
So could have you packed your bags and gone head back to Lukla and flew out? Could have
you
done that?
I could have raised the conversation. I could have. Yeah. Quite easily, I would have.
And
had
she
to
said,
my
"Just
flight.
Keep get the most out of it for
yeah.
the rest of the trip."
She's like, "She's just like, just you're there." She's like, "You're putting that much work for it." She's like, "Maybe Everest is off for the time being, but you can still get something out of it, make a few stories, whatever." And I was like, "You know what? Okay, well, I am here now. I've put in a lot of work. We may as well tough it out."
So you're at the camp. You've had medication. You're feeling a bit better slowly. So how many days have you been sitting in this camp for this town?
About three or four.
And then you started to get stronger again.
I was back up and about. So we had the next walk was a 7-hour walk to Labuche.
How many days was that after?
That would have been 4 days after.
4 days after. And what sort of test, in a way, when did you know that you could do the 7 hours? Like, when did you realise that you were up and about again?
To be honest, probably the day before we left, I was up and I was walking around a little bit. I was drinking water again.
But that's a long way from being able to walk 7 hours.
Yeah. I don't know. I just got the vibe that I was okay. I just knew. I just your body.
Yeah, like, food poisoning doesn't last you that long, does it?
No.
It usually only goes a couple of days and you're back on business usually. So probably not a bad thing that, like, out of all the sickness things, at least you know it's going to be reasonably short, I guess.
And the comforting thing was that whole trip, if I needed any help, I had insurance. Like, a helicopter could just come and grab me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's
I was covered.
An absolute must. You had the.
So I was okay. I was happy to, and we could go slow that day. There was no particular place we had to be at a particular time.
But was that you telling me that some people, like, on Everest, just on, I don't know, like, sometimes they just, when they climbed Everest or had attempted Everest, they had enough.
Yeah.
And then they just call in a helicopter.
Yeah.
And that, the excess is only like $500 or $1,000, and they just pay it and get out of there.
Yeah, they just want to be out.
That'd be smart. Like, in my head, when I heard that, I was like, I'm going to block that away.
Yes.
Like, you can just call a helicopter and let your health insurance, your travel insurance, what you call it, pay for it.
Cover the cost.
But anyway, so that did run through your mind, I'm guessing.
It was playing through my head. But then as I started walking, first 20 minutes, I was like, I feel good.
This is a seven-hour day.
Yeah.
And you're heading to your next, you're heading to the real Everest Base Camp at this point.
No, actually. We are heading to, actually, I'm trying to get the details of the trip. We are heading to Labuche. Oh, sorry, we are. Yeah, we're heading to real Everest Base Camp. So that was actually about 2 days further down the track. So we were going to Labuche, we're going to stay there for a night, rest a bit more, head out to base camp, stay there for a couple of days, get ready for
Everest Base Camp.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then, so yeah, we went to Labuche.
Yep.
And I was.
You've already, this is the same town you were before. Yeah.
Yep. I was flying this day. I was feeling good. Towards the end of it, I was ready to stop. I was tired.
This is the 7 hour.
Yeah.
Yep.
We got there. I slept, ate, whatever, recovered.
Yep. But you did got through it 7 hours. You're back
in business.
That
was fine. I was back on board.
You're
and to
back
be honest,
on board.
Felt pretty good that day.
Yep. You're obviously keeping an eye on yourself during the day.
I was keeping an eye on myself. Yeah. I was drinking a lot, eating a lot, whatever. Yeah, and then...
So let's stop, sorry. Let's stop there. So this point, Everest for 2016...
Yes.
Is done.
Is off, yeah. So I was just getting the most out of this trip for what it was, rather than thinking, okay, this is going to be helpful towards Everest. This was just, okay, this is just an experience.
So Everest is done. So just walk me through the feeling, because you have put in man hours for 12 months on this trip.
Yeah.
And in an instant, it's ripped away from you. Talk me through it.
Yeah.
How did you feel? What was going through your mind?
It was really mixed emotions. It was I was so disappointed. I was trying to process it all. I was so disappointed, but at the same time, I felt this, and I'm never ever going to use this as justification not to aim big and go hard, but there was certainly an element of just stress being lifted off my shoulders. The fact that I didn't have to market myself anymore, I didn't have to chase sponsors, I didn't have to be on the grind day in, day out. And as I said, I'm never ever going to use that as an excuse not to chase big things, but there was certainly an element of relief.
Yeah, understandably.
Of just, okay, well, I can chill out for a bit. And I felt so burned out. Like, I was speaking to Jesse before I left, and I don't think I've ever been as uptight as I was before that trip, just because my head was constantly on the go. I couldn't just sit here and just enjoy this podcast. I was like, okay, later I have to call this company, I have to chase that company, I have to make a video, I have to do this, I have to try and find out where I can make more money, get media attention, get some exposure.
It's exhausting, isn't it?
It's because it's just constant, and there's always something else you can do.
And this was going on every day, and you'd already talked about in previous podcasts as well, this has been your most stressful year for you in your life.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say, or
yeah,
not fair
definitely,
to say?
Definitely.
Most stressful. So you've competed at, you've gone to world university games across country.
Yeah.
You've obviously done every other general life thing, from getting married to...
Yeah.
Very stressful. But yeah. I mean, like, you've done every other general... You've had all those sorts of things that most people experience. But this is definitely another level in terms of stress, just constant effort and stress.
That's the new
And in this instant, all that stress is probably lifted from you in a way, because you realise, for 2016, the dream is over.
Like, yeah.
And you can't... You're not allowed to climb.
Well, actually, here's a little D&M moment for you. When I was walking back from Island Peak, the first time I realised that Everest was over, I had my sunnies on, I was walking back, and there were tears going down my face of disappointment. But I reckon 50% of the tears were disappointment, and 50% was just like a... I just had not realised how stressed I was about this whole thing until it was done.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I just felt the world had been lifted off my shoulders, and it was just like I could breathe again.
Yeah.
And as I said, I want to just emphasise, like, I never ever want to let myself not chase something big because there's a little bit of stress involved.
Well, but anything big has that stress.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, you're right.
Anything big, anything worth doing is going to stretch you out. Was it, you're the biggest advocate of this in a way, because achieving great things requires that.
Yeah.
And this is what I preach on this thing. And this is not a bad thing, but it does show how much effort was going into this.
Yeah.
I guess at this point,
you
probably realise, because Everest is the biggest, baddest thing you can climb in the world. This is the biggest, tallest mountain, hardest thing in the world to climb in terms of it's the biggest. Like, I know there's harder climbs to do, but... So, you know, it's understandable for me listening to this because you put in a lot of effort. You weren't paying from this from your own cash.
Yeah.
You were on the grind every day chasing sponsors, which is very challenging.
Yeah. Especially because it's been done before. Especially because people have climbed it. It's not like I'm the first. So people are like, what do you got to offer? And I was trying to, you know, I genuinely believed in the mission that I had. Like, I wanted to really encourage people to think about what, with like a little bit of thought, a little bit of passion, could they actually put into practice to step out and chase.
Yeah.
And I believed in that mission, but it was just a little bit hard to sell it well, because...
Well, it's interesting. The key word you used just then, passion, a little bit of passion. And let's just go back to your passion for mountain climbing.
Great, yeah.
And you touched on it before on the three things you recommended before, but talk to me about your passion for climbing and what, once you realised Mount Everest is over, what were your learnings from that, and what would your advice to... Yeah, what were your learnings, basically?
I heard Tony Robbins speak the other day. He was in an interview and someone asked him if he's ever failed at anything he's done. And he goes... and he's
interesting,
like,
question.
That was the response he had. He laughed and he goes...
It is quite funny.
He goes, it's so funny. He goes, people look at how successful I am in the industry that I'm in now and just assume it's always been that way. He goes, I've failed at so much stuff. And for me, that was encouraging because obviously I wanted to run in the Olympics and I was competitive and I was good, but I didn't run in the Olympics. And then I wanted to play AFL for a period of time and I didn't play AFL. And then I've tried to climb Everest and at this point in time, it looks like it's not going to happen. And so easy to get caught up thinking, far out, there are three big goals I've set and I've failed. And Tony Robbins goes, yeah, and that's what so many people stop themselves from actually chasing a goal because they're so scared of the result of fail. He goes, but what people forget is the fact that one time you might get it. And I love that. So before I answer the question, I just want to frame it in the fact that I beat myself up a little bit about the fact that Everest wasn't going to happen in the time frame that I wanted it to happen. And I'm like, man, I failed at this. But even Facebook, I feel like every person who's ever achieved anything in their life seems to have this capacity to fail big and come back harder. And that's exactly what I plan to do. Not necessarily in mountain climbing, but I just want to frame that, premise that with my answer to that question with that, because in my head, the biggest thing at the time was, man, I failed. And then I come back and thought, okay, well, there's another way of looking at failure. In fact, there's looking at it as though a big learning experience. And when you start looking at it as a learning experience, it doesn't become a failure anymore. It becomes a key component of your next step in whatever it is that you want to do. And for me, this whole Everest experience has become a massive learning experience. And speaking about passion, as you just asked me, what I realized about Everest and mountain climbing and everything before I left was, I've been trying to promote this idea of finding what you're passionate about, and I've become so blinded by my own little mission that I wasn't really thinking about how passionate I was about mountain climbing, which, to be honest, wasn't that much. And in fairness to myself, I was going over there to find out if I loved it. But I think for the amount of time, the amount of effort, the amount of money that I committed to it, it wasn't enough passion for me to actually justify those things, I don't think. If I can put this in one sentence, before I invest so much time, effort, and money into anything in my life again, I want to line up against my values and my life mission and go, is this actually going in the direction of where you should be? Is this what you're actually passionate about achieving? And if it's not, why are you putting so much time into it? And I don't think I can actually justify doing, I don't want to say justify, I don't think I would put that much time and effort into something that I'm not already bloody passionate about.
It's interesting, a few things there, but one of the things, so I'm just talking about for people listening, so people thinking, how can they sort of work out if they are passionate for something, is the first question I sort of want to ask. And you did mention your values, and I'm a massive believer in knowing what your key core values are. Now, we could probably spend another hour on finding out that. That's another topic conversation. But basically, once you have your values, like my personal ones, I have my personal ones, and you, I'm sure, have yours.
Yeah.
And I guess in future, you're going to look at these values and sort of realize that you have them, and you've got to line your mission up with that, those values. So what I'm trying to say is, people listening to this podcast, they've got to know what they're about, who they are, what their identity is, and then, but this is probably something you probably skipped in a way. Is this where your maybe ego took over a little bit and you got caught up in the excitement of actually, you know, climbing?
Yeah, I think while I was away, there was such a reflective time, because as I was going through all this, there was so much time to think as well, because you're in the middle of nowhere, there's nothing to do. And I was reading Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yep.
And he said that one thing that so many people do is when they go through, I love the way he put it. He goes, whenever you build a house, he goes, people do the blueprint. They know exactly what they want the house to look like. They know where the door's going to be. They know where the bolts are going to be. They know where the backyard's going to be. They know the shape of the house, the size of the house. They got a really clear picture of what they're trying to achieve. And he said, but in life, so many of us have no blueprint. So many of us have no idea about what it is that we're actually going. Like, we've got no sort of blueprint for what we're trying to achieve. And I was thinking, far out, I actually don't really have much of a blueprint for what I'm trying to achieve. So while I was over there, I thought, man, I'm going to have to put into practice some little blueprint. So I wrote up.
Can I just hold you for a second? Yeah. We've actually just had walk-in. It's pretty exciting, Ash. We've got they've snuck quietly into the room.
As you were speaking before, I snuck out and told him to be quiet.
No. I was actually thinking. I'm thinking if it's all right, the guys would grab a seat and actually be interesting because it could come and join on the podcast because we've got Tyson's wife, Jessie. Jesse's brother, Sammy, and also his wife, Chris Dooley as well. So grab some seats, guys, and it'd be cool to get them join in.
In the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, we're coming towards the end, and it's interesting. Obviously, these guys probably experienced Tyson's journey more so than me even.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jesse in particular. So we're just discussing at the end. Tyson's gone through his whole trip. We've gone for about 2 hours here with folks listening, and we've talked the whole trip. We're at the point now where Tyson's realised the Everest dream's over. Like, he hasn't climbed that mountain. He's been sick. He's spoken all about that. And I guess, you know, Jesse had this amazing advice Tyson was talking about and so impressive. And then, but now we're sort of talking about with going after these big missions and how people and all listeners out there across the globe can listen to this and go, you know, line their values up with what they're actually trying to achieve. And you were just saying that. So your learnings from this, such key moments now and what you're going to invest your time and money into.
Yeah, well, I was just saying, I was in the middle of saying before these guys came through that, Stephen...
I'm sure you were saying some amazing
things. I was just saying that, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, talks about how whenever we build a house, they've got like the blueprint. They know exactly what they want it to look like. But so many of us go through life without any blueprint, without any mindset of what we're actually trying to achieve. And I knew that I was trying to achieve inspiring people and building people up and getting to think about their passions. But in the process, I'd forgotten about what I was actually trying to achieve myself. So while I was there, I wrote up like a life mission statement to myself. And earlier this year, I actually on the podcast shared what my major values are. And at the time, they were God, my family, my health, communication or my coaching, and adventure, getting out. And I've also added contribution because I want to contribute to causes I believe in and just some chill time to that. So I've gone through that and I just thought a little bit more about what that actually looks like. How can I set goals? What's my blueprint with those things? And so I've come home just with the idea that I'm not just going to go scattered, build a house without a blueprint. I'm going to really apply what I know to what it is that I'm trying. Is this making sense?
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
I think having a blueprint, having a bit of a direction towards what I'm trying to achieve is
massive. So I guess in future, like, you're obviously having a few weeks chilling out now, which is cool.
Nice.
But I guess in future I know you and you'll definitely have your next mission and whatever else it's going to be. So just in a very practical sense for listeners out there, if you could give two or three key points that they need to sort of check off in regards to getting this done. So you basically just got to align your values with your mission, and then if it's not with those values, then ultimately don't do it.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Say three points.
Yeah, two or three points.
I would say the first one, the biggest one for me, is have a blueprint for your life.
Yep.
Like, know what you're passionate about, what your values are, and really align what you do with those things. I would say the second thing is, don't let your ego dictate your direction.
Yep.
Don't do something based on how it's going to make you look. Because Everest for me was a big thing about, I was probably just trying to impress too many people so they can go, oh, did you see what Tyce achieved?
Yeah.
And it wasn't something I was passionate about. Mountain climbing was something I'd never really thought of.
Really? That fascinating. I'm sure listeners, it's so interesting because you spent so much time on it and you hadn't figured that out.
I figured it out pretty quickly when I was over there.
Yeah.
Which is what the whole month training trip was about. Just finding out. But at the same time, if I had my time again, I wouldn't invest as much time and effort into something I wasn't already 100% certain that I was passionate about.
It's in my head. I'm sort of learning from this. I'm thinking if I'm going to say do a 100K run across the desert or something, I'm going to go out and do a 40K run across the desert and see if I actually like it.
Make sure.
And I can do that. You know, you can do that sort of quicker time frame. So I could go out. If I decided in December next year I'm going to do a 100K run, I could go out next month and do a 40K.
Yeah.
And I might hate it and go, I'm not doing this ever again. But yeah, I mean, like, is that what you're thinking for next time? You could do something like that and do a tester? Like, or is there nothing like that you could do in future? Like,
I think so. I reckon. I just think that it's, when I actually sit down and think about what I'm passionate about, what I care about, it's quite obvious to me. And even just the things that I'm curious in. But I think my passions to me, and I guess this is different for all people, my passions are very clear when I actually take the time to think about them.
Yeah.
For me, my ego just got in the way a little bit. I still believed in the cause behind what I was doing, but I think I was a little bit overrun by the fact that I was just trying to get a little bit of attention for what I was achieving rather than what I was actually...
So that's what you mean by ego. Just you're looking for attention, looking for notoriety.
Yeah, notoriety.
Say that right? Yeah, so that's sort of what you're sort of looking... And then you realise that probably wasn't a...
That's just not a big enough reason to do something.
Yeah, for sure. So, Jess, I'd actually love to ask you, obviously, through this... get you involved in this, but just coming towards the end, just a couple of interesting your advice. Obviously, Tyce mentioned he was quite stressed sort of when he was climbing the first mountain. He hadn't touched base with you, and what were you thinking this time when you hadn't heard from him for a couple of days? And was that a stress for you, or were you pretty relaxed about it all and just like...
I'm not going to lie, I hated every moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite a challenge, so you're sort of a bit, I guess, nervous about what he was doing over there and whether he was okay.
Not knowing what was going on.
Yeah, it's interesting that it is for sure, and definitely me over here as well. Keep an eye on. I hadn't heard from you a few days, and I sort of felt like something was up. When I didn't hear from a couple of days, but before that, it was daily. Like we got awesome posts daily.
Yeah,
and everyone was loving them, and I felt like something was up.
I think I knew when Tyce left, that it was going to be something that really was a decider for him. I said to him before he left, "What if you come back and realize you don't want to do this? It's going to be okay if you decide that." There's no shame in that. Yeah. So I think that was my out, from him going over there, I suppose that would be, we saw the trip as a bit of a tester.
Yeah.
This would cement Everest for us.
Mm.
And it came back that way, which is weird because I had that thought before he left.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's an awesome trip. And I actually love the way Pete Fricks had organised this trip. I think it's ideal. If you just did a training trip to, say, New Zealand, that doesn't cut the mustard. That doesn't give you a real idea what's going on. But I think they've done it well. I think it's cool. And I personally love the black and whiteness of the two
so
things.
Do I.
But the cool thing is, I know 2016's rubbed out.
Yeah.
And I know you're probably still a bit now, maybe a bit, I don't know, you tell me more, but you're a bit flat. But you could come back in 2020,
exactly.
2025,
yeah.
2055.
You've
got 50 years to climb this.
That's
heaps of time.
You don't have to do this in the next, and there might become a time where someone like myself or anyone might want to join you, and that might be a better situation. But
true.
Throughout the whole journey, I framed my expedition with the question, what's your Everest?
Yeah.
Mm.
And I think I was so focused on throwing that question at everyone else that I probably didn't consider what my Everest actually was. Because the whole time I was like, well, Everest is my Everest in this scenario. And now I'm thinking about that question. I thought, well, you know what?
So much more.
I think my Everest might be something different.
Yeah. And
you know what I mean?
And you're okay with that.
I'm okay with that.
And everyone should be okay with that.
Yeah. That's good.
I think it's cool. It's a cool realization. Because being honest with yourself in that, and you could have come back and, I guess, stuck your chest out and go, oh, I'm okay, I'm coming back the following year, or when you knew it wasn't right.
Yeah.
But you might yet.
Who knows? I'm sure the mountain will be there for a lot more years.
Yeah, I would have thought so. So, now that's cool. And I guess the last part of the trip was, you actually did go and climb the second mountain, and you got to the top. So you were, physically, you were pretty damn good. You had a bad day, obviously, that day, but it might have been a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, I think so. Exactly. I think so. The whole trip, I had my little phrase. I just kept saying, God, open doors and close doors. If it's supposed to happen, open them. If it's not supposed to happen, close them.
Yeah.
So I think I felt peace with the fact that the door was closed, because I walked back and I thought, well, it's pretty much what I was. That was my motto the whole trip. The frustrating part and the more difficult part for my ego was, we got up the second mountain. And as we did it, Mingma and Kevin, who both climbed the first mountain, finished up. They said that second mountain was so much harder than the first.
And
another bloke who helped us out, one of the porters, he's climbed Everest 7 times. I said to him, I said, what did you think of that? He goes, you're a very strong climber.
Wow, yeah.
And I said, do you reckon I could do Everest? And he goes, I got no doubt.
Wow.
And I thought, well, at least that leaves that door open a little bit. If it's ever something on the plan the next couple of years, it's a nice little confirmation to take with you on the start of a journey like that. But it was disappointing, but at the same time it was an amazing experience, amazing lessons.
We both feel really good about the outcome,
so chilled, don't
really
we
good.
Yeah,
oh, for sure. It's incredible, and it goes to show the sort of athlete you were, to get that sort of validation from those 7-time experienced climbers that you were the real deal. You weren't up there without the ability to do it, I guess, in a way. And
nice.
I think that's, from experienced climbers, they sort of would see a lot and they would probably understand.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So I think that the door's open for you to do it. Whether it's just up to you whether that's a passion of yours. And I guess at this point, probably not. But
not right now.
But maybe in future.
Yeah.
And I think it's been an unbelievable experience. You look back on the year, and obviously all of us people in this room now have seen a lot of experience, a lot of ups and downs, and some cool thing. It's a pretty cool journey for the last 12 months. Since that day you rang me up 12 months ago and said, I'm going to Everest. And I was like, holy shit. And so it's been cool. It's cool. It's I definitely don't think it's done, and I don't think you need to put, this is my view, I don't think you need to put close the door on it. I don't think you need to.
Well, I've been friends with you too long to close that particular door.
You did have a lot of passion for it in a way, and I know it's different view now, but you know, like, it's, who knows, you might grow into it a bit more, or I don't know, something might come up. But I'm sure you'll definitely be undertaking something crazy soon. Yeah. So, and
there'll always be something.
Oh, absolutely, and yeah, for sure. So, I guess coming towards the end of the 2 hours, it's the longest podcast I've done by a long way, by the way. But I think it's been awesome, and this is a bit of a cool. But you've had a big following for this, and I'm sure a lot of people listen to this whole thing pretty really enjoyed it. I'm sure they have, and sharing your whole experience, being honest and. Yeah, so I just want to wrap up, man. Really want to acknowledge you, man, for getting up there and having a crack. Thanks, you inspired a shitload of people.
Yeah,
like, you had a full-on, genuine, no-holds-bar crack. You put yourself on the line.
Yeah.
You've been on all national radio, national TV. You've had a fucking crack.
Yeah.
Excuse the language of it. Like, you had a genuine go, and, man, I think you should be super proud of yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever happens in future, doesn't matter. Yeah. You apply yourself like this from a coach to a coach. Yeah. You apply yourself like this to anything, you'll smash it. And we're all proud of you, especially these people in the room, everyone listening, Superman. Mm-hmm. So you are Superman to us, and I really look forward to following you in future. Put the feet up for this summer, enjoy, and we'll definitely have you back on this podcast very soon, and chatting more and learning more. So appreciate that, man. Thanks for your time. So there it is, folks, episode 39 and part 2, and the final episode with Tyson Popplestone's journey to Everest, and hope you really enjoyed it. I mean, I get so much out of these episodes every time I catch up with such amazing people, and Tyson is just another one of those. So guys, I hope you really enjoyed that, and we'd love to hear from you from that, whether you get on my social media pages or send me an email, whatever it is. You can get that all at eliteteamleadership.com.au, and actually all the show notes will be on there of this episode, links to Tyson's website, all those cool things. And if you can subscribe and particularly give us a review on iTunes for this podcast, that really helps us out a lot in taking this actual podcast next level and get some absolute amazing more guests and keep them coming for you guys to listen to each week. So thank you very much. Hope you had a super Christmas, and look forward to your New Year's Eve, and hopefully have a great time there, and have a couple of days to enjoy yourselves with your family. So guys, excited. Last episode was for 2015, I think, and then we'll doing a review episode next week of the year and my learnings, and I think you'll get a lot out of that, so keep an eye out for that one next week. But enjoy your week, guys. Get stuck in, and we'll speak soon.